Hi, I'm Anthony Stalter, and welcome to 4-4 Fantasy Football's Most Accurate Podcast. As always, I'm joined by 4-4 Senior Editor John Paulson, who was named the Most Accurate Expert of 2010 and 2014 by Fantasy Pros. He's the only expert to win the competition twice, and he's finished in the top five in five of the last six seasons. And as John joins me right now on this Thursday afternoon, he just came off of celebrating an anniversary with his wife Amy on Wednesday, right, John?
That's right, 13 years, and congratulations to you. You're a proud papa.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Madeline, my wife gave birth to our daughter, Madeline, last Tuesday, and it's been unbelievable. Been some early challenges with sleep deprivation and things like that, but she's honestly, she's a great baby. She's a tremendous baby, and looking, just loving every minute of it so far, John. Honestly, I know you've been a father for a long time now with Max, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get used to the sleep deprivation here for the next year or so. Although occasionally the babies settle down and sleep through the night, and depends on the baby, I guess. But we'll see. I guess we'll get an update every week. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. I guess if my energy levels dips big time, you'll know whether or not I'm getting any sleep.
Definitely.
Before we jump in, let's talk a little bit about the music that brought us in today.
Yes, that's a band called the Roosevelts. They're from Nashville. And their 2016 album, The Greatest Thing You'll Ever Learn, that track is called Peaches, and I think it fits in with the blues rock thing we have going. I added it to the Most Accurate Podcast playlist, and you can also find that track on Spotify.
All right, now before we jump in, I'd like to remind listeners that early bird pricing ends tonight, which is June 30th, so you can get a premium subscription at 444, that's the number 4, F-O-R, number 4.com. for just $24 and a DFS subscription for $79. So if you're listening today, which is Thursday, the early bird pricing ends tonight. If you've been on the fence, now's the time to jump on it because, again, that subscription's going to go up. So right now you can get a premium subscription for just $24 and that DFS subscription for $79. This is what we're going to do today, John. We're going to start off by talking about your latest article, which is 13 old-timers to consider on draft day. And you've written this article in the past. I think you bring up a good point in your opening paragraph where you're talking about how fantasy owners like to dive into the rookies. We're intrigued by the young players. And ultimately, there's always several veterans that fall to the later rounds. Now, last year wasn't a great year for your list of old-timers, but there were a couple notable exceptions, they being Danny Woodhead, who is the RB3, Larry Fitzgerald, wide receiver 9, Frank Gore, RB14, then Steve Smith and Justin Forsett produced good numbers until they went down with injuries. So let's start off with your wide receivers that you listed for this year, including Larry Fitzgerald. You like him again at age 33.
Yeah, I mean, he's being drafted in the number 28 receiver off the board after finishing ninth last year, and he wasn't that great after. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't elite after Michael Floyd kind of came back from his hand injury. Larry Fitzgerald was the wide receiver 16 from week 4 to week 17, with Floyd playing his full complement of snaps and getting his full complement of targets. So I think there's definitely still value there with Fitzgerald as he's being drafted, in the low 20s, as opposed to in the teens where maybe he should be. But I do understand that the age 33 kind of scares some people off. The kind of the slower finish towards the end of the year might scare some people off, but he's still going to be a real solid, productive receiver in PPR formats.
And I mentioned Steve Smith of the Ravens, who did produce some good numbers last year before going down. You also list him again at age 37. He's the wide receiver 49. So you think that he's going to fall and still, but yet still provide some value this season.
Yeah, I mean, Smith, looking at last year, and we talked about Danny Woodhead and Larry Fitzgerald and those guys, you know, even though the list overall didn't fare as well as the previous season, those, you know, if you drafted Woodhead or Fitzgerald, those were league winning picks, or they definitely put you in position to win more games than the competition. I mean, like Fitzgerald was the seventh round pick last year, but then Steve Smith was just on fire in that first half of the season. He was the number 10 PPR receiver before tearing his Achilles after 8 weeks. And I think the situation with him is a little dicey this year because he's 37 coming off the Achilles tear. And we don't really know when he'll be fully healthy, but I feel like if he's playing and healthy, he's going to be the top target in that passing offense, just given the way he played last year at 36. So the issue is you've got Kamar Aiken, who had a pretty good season last year filling in, and Breshad Perriman's avoided a serious knee injury a few weeks ago, and looks like he's going to play week one. And then they added Mike Wallace, who appears to be – I also list Wallace under the wide receiver section. It appears to be a better fit with Joe Flacco's big arm. Flacco throws a pretty good deep ball, and Wallace was struggling getting good deep passes, deep attempts to him from Ryan Tannehill or Teddy Bridgewater, so it might be a good fit there. So we really don't know who the top three receivers are going to be, top two receivers in Baltimore. So we've got to kind of watch this summer and see how things shake out.
Vincent Jackson struggled with that knee injury in 2015, but with Mike Evans taking over, a lot of people focusing on him. You think that Jackson, even at age 33, could potentially be, what, a wide receiver three?
Yeah, I don't think he's washed up. He's being drafted in the 50s, so the fantasy community is kind of treating him like a wide receiver five. And when he was healthy last year, he was posting near wide receiver two type numbers, so he was in the 25 to 28 range, 3.9 catches for 66 yards, 0.38 touchdowns in 8 games that he was able to finish last year. So he's going in the 10th, 11th round, and that's not bad. That's not bad value for Jackson. I mean, he was a couple years ago was a fourth, fifth round pick.
Speaking of kind of a forgotten man, Pierre Garçon. Out in Washington, he's 30. Any concern about the TCU rookie Josh Doctson taking over?
Yeah, that's why he's Garcon is going wide receiver 69 right now. I mean, people are totally writing him off, which seems a little strange to me, but given the fact that Doctson is coming in. But is he going to start week one and be ahead of Garcon? You've also got DeSean Jackson there, who gets a little nicked up with the knee injuries, and you don't know if he's going to be out there. So Garcon still is a steady receiver for the Kirk Cousins there, and I don't think he's going to be written off that quickly. And there was a beat writer, I forget his name, who basically said the same thing, that Garcon's still going to see starter snaps.
All right, Stevie Johnson, before we move on to the running backs, I want to talk about him. At age 30, and a lot of people in San Diego, they're going to target Keenan Allen. They're going to target the new acquisition, Travis Benjamin, who comes over from Cleveland to join that wide receiver group with the Chargers. But you still feel like Stevie Johnson may be a wide receiver four at worst?
Well, he's being drafted in the 90s, so I think the fantasy community has decided that Benjamin's going to start. Another beat writer, again, I don't have his name on the top of my tongue, just talked about Stevie as the third receiver there. So he's also assuming Benjamin is going to start, and it makes sense. I mean, they went out and signed Benjamin for his speed and to kind of fill that Malcolm Floyd role in the offense. But if you look at Stevie, he had 6 games with Keenan Allen. He played at a 64 catch, 755 yard pace, which isn't bad. Those are wide receiver 4 numbers. In PPR, when Allen went down and Johnson played 3 games without Allen, he was at a 112 catch, 1,141 yard pace. So I think Johnson is probably best served to be sort of a handcuff to Keenan Allen or someone that owners have on speed dial if Allen goes down with an injury again this year, because Stevie can step in. He kind of showed in that stretch that he still had it and or still has it. And can produce at a high level if called upon.
Let's move on to running backs and your 13 old-timers to consider on draft night. Matt Forte of the Jets, he comes over from Chicago. He's 30 years old, and he joins a backfield that also includes Powell and then Kerry Robinson, who comes over from New Orleans. But Matt Forte, seemingly John, could be a huge fit or a nice fit under Chan Gailey and in his offense, maybe playing a little bit out of the slot this year.
Yeah, he should catch a lot of passes. I mean, if you look at what Bilal Powell did last year in the passing game, most of that should go to Forte. Forte says he's expecting to play an every down role. I don't know if that was something that was promised to him when they signed him as a free agent. So, you know, he's a great pass catcher, as we know, and he hasn't finished outside the top 12 in PPR. So he's the 13th, 14th running back off the board right now in that format. So I think that's a pretty good spot for him value-wise.
It's kind of interesting, you know, you talk about PPR running backs. Danny Woodhead, he finished number 3 in PPR in 2015, as you wrote about in your article. I'm impressed with the fact that he still finished 12th in standard format. So Danny Woodhead isn't just somebody that can be an RB2 in a PPR format. He's got some value in a standard league as well.
Yeah, I think we discussed him a little bit on a pod recently, but if you look at my article, Danny Woodhead is RB1 upside again in 2016. If you do a search for that, you'll see all the reasons I like him this year. I feel like he's a really good pick in the fifth round of PPR drafts. He led all receivers in red zone catches in 2013 under Ken Wisenhunt, who's back as the offensive coordinator. He was number one in targets, red zone targets at his position last year as well. So he's definitely somebody that they use in the red zone, and the fact that they're changing offensive coordinators doesn't scare me at all. He finished 12th that year at PPR, and that was with Ryan Matthews getting 285 carries. So even if Melvin Gordon comes along and takes a big step forward this year, I still think that there's a big PPR role for Woody.
I like the third running back listed in your article here, Frank Gore. He's 33, but he doesn't have a lot of competition in Indianapolis. He's going to benefit from not only Andrew Luck hopefully returning to a healthy season, but they also drafted an absolute stud in the first round in center Ryan Kelly, who should open up things for Gore nicely. And you like Gore as well.
Yeah, that should help his running lanes there. Gore is more of a between the tackles guy, so getting a good center like that will really help that offensive line and help Gore's output. And you know, just moving the ball better and having Andrew Luck under center should give him more goal line opportunities. I think if you're worried about Gore's longevity or his health, I think the guy to target as his handcuff is Josh Ferguson. He's really impressed in offseason activities, and he's going very late in drafts right now, so he's basically free. You could probably get Gore and Ferguson for real cheap, and you're probably going to lock up the Colts running game if you do that.
All right, Jonathan Stewart, he reportedly, according to the Charlotte Observer earlier this month, he was still dealing with soreness after the injury he suffered in the loss of the Super Bowl to the Broncos, but if he stays healthy, he was an absolute monster in that scheme last year. And with so many defenses focusing in on Cam Newton and that running game, Stewart is likely to have another big season at age 29.
Yeah. And, you know, he had 8 straight games with 20 plus carries last year. And I think his ADP is being kind of beat down due to the foot injury. He's typically going in the 7th round. And, you know, he finished quite a bit higher than that last year in terms of his production. And it's another situation where you could get his backup. And I think his backup's going to be Cameron Artis Payne. He finished the season pretty strong. I think he averaged 4.6 yards per carry in the last 3 games that Stewart missed. Fozzie Whitaker's there as well. But I think Artis Payne would be the handcuff to have. And he's going very late in drafts as well. So you could grab Stewart and Payne and probably lock up that Carolina running game.
Do you think that Rashad Jennings, who you listed here in your article as well, do you think that he's going to be the workhorse back in New York, or eventually will the fifth-round running back Paul Perkins take over?
Well, I think Perkins might take over if Jennings gets dinged up, which is a possibility at age 31. But to start the season, I think Jennings will be the bell cow there. And they didn't have much success with their four-headed running back scheme last year. If you remember, they were giving carries to 4 running backs, and it just wasn't working very well. They finished really strong. Jennings finished really strong in the final month of the season. He had 521 total yards and 2 touchdowns in the final 4 games. So I think he heads into the season as the starter with Shane Vereen getting the PPR reception work. the backfield, and they'll work Park Perkins in if he outplays Jennings. But you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen here in his age 31 season. I think he's a nice value as the 41st running back off the board.
You also have Justin Forsett listed here. Now, he broke his arm, so he missed the final six games last season for the Ravens. But 2 years ago, he was an absolute monster. Now, he's going to have to battle both Kenneth Dixon and Buck Allen in that Baltimore backfield. But recently, actually a couple months ago now, John Harbaugh said that Forsett should be back to 100%. So he could be a nice value if owners start to fall asleep on him in the later rounds.
Yeah, the Baltimore Sun referred to Forsett as the presumed starter if he's healthy, which he is healthy now. If you look at Forsett last year, he was number 17 in standard, number 12 in PPR through the first 10 weeks. He Buck Allen came in and did better in terms of his production, but it wasn't his yards per carry wasn't very good. Buck Allen, it was 3.75 compared to Forsett's 4.25. So if the coaching staff is using that as a barometer of who should start, then I think Forsett wins that job. And, in Mark Trestman's system, he's going to catch a lot of passes, so he's got an extra value in PPR formats. And sometimes Forsett is the second running back after Kenneth Dixon off the board. I don't know that I've seen Buck Allen drafted ahead of Forsett, but people are kind of falling in love with Kenneth Dixon. And right now, I think he's third on the depth chart.
One final running back that you list is LeGarrette Blount. Now, as you write, he's probably going to be the two in a 1-2 punch with Deion Lewis. But he still maybe has some value as an RB2.
Yeah, he's got some hip injury that's sort of mysteriously lingering. So I think that's causing his ADP to drop. And, he's been around in the 10th, 11th round. And for a guy who's always a threat for a multiple touchdown game, that's pretty good value. And he's nice to have in best ball because you don't have to worry about when you're starting him and actually have to brace yourself. You just get to you get to enjoy his good games and not have to worry about his bad games. But the Patriots, in terms of their what's going to be a Blount game and what's going to be a Deion Lewis game, they tend to follow a pattern where if they're playing an elite rush defense, they don't really try to run the ball much, and that's more of a Deion Lewis game. And if they're playing an easy rush defense like the Colts, Blount will typically tear it up against them. So he's kind of predictable in that regard. Although I do think Deion Lewis is the clear number one there, especially in PPR formats.
All right, be sure to read that entire article that John wrote at 444.com if you want to check that out. Again, number 4, F-O-R, number 4.com. All right, we discussed your using advanced stats to identify breakout receivers article on a recent pod, while you and TJ discussed his QB article of the same name last week. Today, I want to ask you about the tight end article written by Jennifer Eakins and then the running back article written by Joe Holka. So let's start off with the tight ends. I want to know what you think of the breakout players that both Jennifer and Joe mentioned. Again, we'll start with Jennifer's tight end article. What do you think about some of the tight ends that she listed in targets per game trending up, some of the promising fantasy points per game tight ends, and then maybe some standout tight ends as well?
Yeah, there's definitely some names that interest me on this list. In the targets per game trending up section that she writes, she's basically looking at tight ends that have the potential to have an increased number of targets in 2016. And the top two names that she mentions are Julius Thomas from the Jaguars and Eric Ebron from the Lions. And I would agree with both of these names that they are trending up in terms of their targets. Ebron, especially with Calvin Johnson out, you would think that he would see a pretty sizable role, especially in the red zone. So many targets went to Calvin, and those are going to have to be spread out a little bit, and Ebron could step in. And, you know, with the tight end position, it's good to remind fantasy owners that rookie tight ends very rarely do anything. Even the most hyped rookies don't do anything. Ebron fell into that category. Max Williams going into a great situation in Baltimore ended up being the second or third tight end off the bench for them. He didn't do much fantasy wise, but it's important not to totally forget about these guys. Ebron had a stretch last year where he was performing as a low end tight end one, and I think he could threaten those types of numbers this year. And Julius Thomas, who has spent a lot of time this offseason with Blake Bortles trying to get on the same page, And apparently he had really good off-season activities as well.
All right, she also writes about promising fantasy points per game, and the stat with the strongest correlation from year to year for tight ends was found to be PPR fantasy points per game, which is why Jennifer listed Zachary Miller, Austin Seferian Jenkins of Tampa Bay, and then Zach Ertz of the Eagles. Your thoughts on those three tight ends?
Well, I certainly like Zach Miller and Zach Ertz, not just because I love the name Zach, which I actually don't. I'm not a big fan of the name Zach. No offense to any of the Zachs out there. But Miller was the number five tight end over the final 9 weeks last year, and that included week 17, which he missed due to injury. He averaged 2.9 catches for 51 yards and 0.63 touchdowns on about five targets per game in that span. And then that even had there was even a stretch in there where Martellus Bennett was playing. In the four games that Bennett missed, Miller averaged five catches for 55 yards and 0.5 touchdowns on 6.8 targets per game. As everyone knows, Bennett is now in New England, and Miller was re-signed by the Bears to start for them. And he is 31. Doesn't have a long track record of fantasy greatness, but I think given his 12th, 13th, 14th round ADP, he's a real nice value there. As for Zach Ertz, he came on down the stretch as well last year. I feel pretty comfortable about him in the new offense with Doug Peterson, since Peterson has experience with a very good tight end in Kansas City, even though I think Travis Kelce is a little underutilized. Ertz's red zone touchdown rate should pick up a little bit given his size and ability. So I think that his touchdowns might bounce back. The guy that I'm not really targeting is Austin Seferian Jenkins there, because he's got some attitude issues. And it appears that Cameron Brate, who Jennifer mentions in the next section, may be overtaking him as the starter. So he's not somebody that I'm really targeting in drafts.
Well, let's talk about that final section that Jennifer writes in her tight end article. She writes that another interesting stat used to identify players with potential to break out is fantasy points per snap. You mentioned Brate. She also lists Vance McDonald, the 49ers, and Jacob Tammy with Atlanta. Now, he'll have to battle a little bit with Austin Hooper, who was taken in the third round out of Stanford in this year's draft. But John Standoff, fantasy points per games per snap, Brate, McDonald, Tammy, your thoughts?
Yeah, McDonald did have a stretch there where he was producing. I think he went under, had another injury, and then kind of came back. Last year the 49ers offense was pretty much a dumpster fire. But in Chip Kelly's offense, a couple things you got to remember about Chip Kelly is that he gave Brent Celek quite a few snaps because he could run block, but he was also productive. If you look at Celek plus Zach Ertz during Kelly's tenure as a pretty productive duo. If McDonald's starting and getting all those snaps, he'll just being in Chip Kelly's offense, which is such a fast-paced offense and has more snaps per game and offensive plays per game, that's just going to help his numbers there. I think he's a bit of a sleeper there if he wins that job, and it appears that he will. And then Brate, the way they're talking him up in OTAs, it appears that he may overtake Seferian Jenkins. But this is one of those situations where, especially in best ball, I'm not really looking to draft either guy, because if that person loses a job, then I've just basically got goose eggs in my roster. But it is somebody, Cameron Brate, that if I were in a regular league and just was kind of punting the position or wanted to draft a TE2 with some upside, Brate should be there at the very end of the draft. And, with Tammy, I'm just so down on rookie tight ends that I'm not really worried about Hooper usurping Tammy this year. You're a Falcons fan. Do you think that Tammy's going to continue to offer PPR value in those late rounds?
Yeah, I think so. I think the only thing that hurts Tammy is the addition of Muhammad Sanu. So assuming that Sanu takes over as the number two read in Matt Ryan's progressions, then I feel like Tammy will bump down to number three, or maybe Devontae Freeman will also kind of, to use your word, usurp some of those looks that Tammy got a year ago. Tammy really was the number two last year because Roddy White continued to struggle with just his role in the offense and the fact that he is aged. Leonard Hankerson was the guy early on. Then he got hurt, and they released him during the middle of the season. So again, after Julio Jones, it wound up being Tammy. So I think you're right. I don't think Hooper will be the threat. I think it will be Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah, I hear you. And the only gleam of hope there, main gleam of hope for Tammy is maybe that the Falcons passing offense has more success in the red zone and is able to capitalize with some touchdowns.
Sure. All right, let's wrap it all up with Joe's article, using advanced stats to identify 7 breakout running backs. Joe goes into much more detail than what we will go into. In fact, he's got a photo of, I don't know if it's a chart or something that he used, John, but I can't even read one line of it. So a lot of detail going into Joe's article, but let's get your take on his 2016 running back breakout candidates, starting off with Carlos Hyde with the 49ers. You mentioned Chip Kelly is now the not only the head coach, but he'll be the play caller in San Francisco. So your thoughts on Carlos Hyde?
Yeah, Joe uses adjusted line yards from Football Outsiders, which is their attempt to remove the quality of the running back from the offensive line play, so you're able to kind of measure offensive lines against each other. And yes, he starts with Carlos Hyde, who had a fairly good success rate. He talks about success rate and team success rate. And comparing the two to kind of identify players that are played head and shoulders above the competition on their team, or you could also compare them to other running backs in the league. So the adjusted line yards for the 49ers last year was 32nd in the league. So that's bound to improve under Chip Kelly, and Hyde would be the main beneficiary there. I do think I'm a little more likely after reading Joe's breakdown to pull the trigger on Hyde. I worry about him a little bit in PPR formats, despite the talk about him being the pass catcher with Sean Drawn theirs. But I do think that Hyde is a decent value there in the fourth round. I might pull the trigger there to kind of get away from taking C.J. Anderson every single fourth round. So looking at that, especially if you're going running or going wide receiver early, that third, fourth round is a good spot to grab your top running back. And certainly with the pace that the 49ers are going to play at, even if they aren't as successful as Chip Kelly's Eagles teams, it should improve considerably. And if he's true to his word about Hyde being the three-down back, then even if the 49ers are playing from behind, then Hyde should be able to score some points in the receiving game.
He also lists Thomas Rawls. He was a rookie last year for Seattle. He got hurt. He spent most of minicamp on the sideline, but Pete Carroll, as Joe writes, has said that Thomas Rawls is certainly going to be in the mix this season. Now, there's a lot of hype surrounding C.J. Procise out of Notre Dame, the one of the backs that Seattle drafted this past April. But do you feel as though that the hype is too much on Procise and that Thomas Rawls is the back that everybody should target in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I think Procise is coming in to take over that Fred Jackson passing down role. That's not something that Rawls did. Didn't catch a lot of passes last year. If you look at the 6 games in which Rawls played and Marshawn Lynch did not, the rookie averaged 20.5 touches for 120 yards and 0.84 touchdowns on 5.6 yards per carry. I think I also saw a stat where he had the most yards after contact as well per carry. So he played very, very well. My only concern with Rawls is not, you know, his role. It's his injury and whether or not his broken ankle is going to be ready to go by week one. A few weeks ago, it sounded like Rawls was closer to returning than Jimmy Graham, but then that script flipped the last week or two. Pete Carroll said that Jimmy Graham's actually kind of past Rawls. And that makes me a little worried about Rawls' health, but his stock's dropping. He's going in the fourth or fifth round now, and I think he's worth the risk there.
All right, moving on here. Charles Sims is also listed among Joe's breakout running back candidates. My only question would be, Doug Martin's still there. He signed a 5-year contract worth $35.775 million, but are you as high on Charles Sims as Joe is?
Well, I don't know where Joe ranks Sims in terms of his, but I've got Sims fairly high, especially in PPR. I mean, he was the number 17 PPR running back last year. He ran the ball well, a lot better than he did as a rookie. So he improved in that area. And he actually, his success rate was actually higher than Doug Martin's, as Joe alludes to in the article. So I think Sims is a nice pick as a third running back, fourth running back, and especially PPR formats. And if anything happens to Martin, then I think you're looking at an RB1 type production out of Sims. And the other issue is how much are the Buccaneers going to be playing from behind? Because if you kind of expect them to be a sub 500 team, then you would expect Sims to be on the field as a receiver quite a bit.
With DeMarco Murray now in Tennessee and Chip Kelly out in San Francisco, Ryan Matthews seems like he could be a breakout candidate, according to Joe. Now Ryan Matthews is going to be in that new offense with Doug Peterson. The pace is going to slow way down. It's always a question of health, though, with Ryan Matthews.
Yeah, and you're talking about a guy who is going in the fifth, sixth round, and I think given his likely role in that offense, that's good value for him. He had 24 games over the past three seasons where he got at least 10 carries and has averaged 87 total yards and half a touchdown. And those are solid RB1 numbers. But as you mentioned, the question with him is his fragility. Are you one that subscribes to that injuries are luck, or do you think a guy is injury prone? That's sort of your question that you have to ask yourself with Matthews. But at the cost of a fifth or sixth round pick, that's not that big a deal. I think you can draft him, and if he only plays 12 games, it's okay. I'd be a lot less likely to want to take him or someone with his history of fragility in the second or third round when there are more dependable options on the board.
Now, we talked about LeGarrette Blount, so we'll move on. The final two running backs that Joe lists among his breakout candidates, Duke Johnson of the Browns and then T.J. Yeldon of the Jaguars. We'll kind of mesh these two together, John, to wrap it all up. Your thoughts on Johnson and Yeldon?
Well, I think Duke has a chance to even outperform his ADP. I think he's a good value where he's at just from a PPR standpoint. And he's a threat to catch 75 passes. But you look at what Hugh Jackson did with the Bengals last year, the touches between Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill were very close. And I think Gio actually edged Hill when the Bengals were trailing, and they didn't trail a whole lot last year. When the Bengals were leading, it was more Hill and less Gio. But if you look at the Browns, I don't know what their expected win totals is, but they're not expected to be leading a lot of games, and that could lead to Johnson actually out-touching Isaiah Crowell if you're going to count his catches and his carries. And if he's also running the ball better than Crowell, then Johnson could end up being a three-down back. And they mentioned earlier in the summer or earlier in the spring that the Browns do view Johnson as a potential three-down back, so that's not out of the realm of possibility. As for Yeldon, I'm not really drafting him much with Chris Ivory there. They paid Ivory like he was going to come in and carry the ball on first and second down. And I think Yeldon is the third down PPR back. Also could get some carries on first and second down. But this looks like a committee to me, and I would expect Ivory to be the primary goal line back, which is going to kind of submarine Yeldon's upside there from a scoring standpoint. So Yeldon is not somebody that I'm really targeting in drafts.
All right, great stuff. John, that is all the time we have for today. Head over to 4for4.com to check out all the articles that not only John wrote, but also Joe and Jennifer, the ones that we discussed today. Be sure to get that early bird subscription by heading over to 4for4.com. You can look for the pinned tweet atop of John's Twitter page as well, at 4for4_John. Again, that early bird subscription price ends tonight, which is June 30th, Thursday, June 30th. So make sure if you're on the fence at all, if you haven't grabbed it, now is the time. So if you're listening to the pod, head over to 444.com and nab that early bird subscription. You can follow me on Twitter as well if you're inclined, at Anthony Stalter. We'll see you next week on 444 from the Sacramento Podcast.